Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The letters merge to create Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Like it kind of goes like...
Brother, brother, brother.
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look, it's over! He's ready! Oh, hell yeah!
It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
Down to a fine art, that is. It's the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. This is where we go back, way back to the first Monday night wrestling war.
The halcyon days of 1995.
Where the biggest worry I had was, did I feed my Tamagotchi?
Is Ace Combat worth buying, or should I just stick with Wipeout?
Why isn't Donkey Kong in Donkey Kong Country 2?
Why isn't anybody buying the Sega Saturn?
I don't think Pierce Brosnan's going to be a very good James Bond. And other questions.
Mr.
That we were
Frosty,
asking.
That's so 1994. What you need now is Big Big Loader.
Oh, nice. Good reference. I bought my nephew for Christmas. The first time I got to see my nephew this week since Christmas. And I bought my nephew a Mr. Frosty because.
It still exists.
Yeah.
What?
Going for my nephew. Because I didn't want him to go through the same trauma that I went
through. I bet it actually works now, though.
Yeah, and it's still a bit crap.
Oh, that's all right. The joy of Mr. Frosty was that it was shit.
Yeah, it was shit.
Your parents would pay out the arse for it, and it would maybe make two ice cubes.
Yeah, basically, it's ice cubes covered in squash. That's what you're making.
Like syrupy ice. Yeah.
You crank his head to make it happen. So that's where the magic is with Mr. Frosty.
It's where all the razor blades are. It's where all the sharp cogs.
It really is.
It'd be like ice picks, right?
And I worry, and it's just dawning on me, that I gave that to a 3-year-old.
Yeah. It's fine.
Oh, his dad will keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
Might keep an eye on him. who be we, by the way? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, and I am with the WCW kid of the Cultaholic HQ. It is, of course, Sam Driver.
Hello.
The Sam Driver on Twitter, not less defined anymore.
Yes.
How's your eye?
Yeah, I've got a, just so everybody knows, just in case we have to stop the recording again.
Full disclosure.
My eye is acting up. I think I had something trapped in it, but I think it scratched my eye, and now around my iris is just like red.
Yeah.
And we started recording before, and Tom was like, your eyes swelling up. So if worst comes to worst, I do have an eye patch. I can hide the ugly, disgusting protrusion from my face, but we're going to wait and see if I start just openly weeping again like I was before, just from one side of my face.
Would it help? I'm just thinking because the light is shining. There's
the
a studio light
not
right
too
there.
Bad. It's more just like a gristly feeling, but there's nothing in there. I've like flushed it out like multiple times. So.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
That's a bit unpleasant. That
it's
was
just grim.
That was not unpleasant. It was Matthew Gregg dinging me.
I'm
on my
blaming
phone
you,
just
listener.
Now.
You listening to this right now. Yeah, you.
It's probably your fault.
It's your fault. That's right. Just you specifically, not the lot of you. You listening to me right
just
now.
You.
In your listening device. And yeah.
Put your hand, take your hand out your trousers. I see you. I see you. I know it's late and I know no one's watching, but I see.
I know that we're fiercely sexual.
Oh, I see you. I know how you listen to this, you monster.
This is a stop wanking PSA from Tom Campbell.
The only snake I play with is Damien. Stop wanking.
Those are amazing, aren't they?
The anti-masturbation PSAs that were faked, sadly.
Yes.
That were put out by WWF. They're fake ones. Do search them out. I'm glad we're, what, 2 minutes in?
Already brought wanking.
We're on wanking.
Yeah.
So the only way is up.
Yeah, so if you're new to our listener, this is pretty much all we do.
Oh, yeah, if you're new, this is not a jumping on point. I mean, good luck if it is. We're going to go back to 1995, to Monday Nitro. We're watching week by week until...
This entire year is a jumping on point.
You know what? It's another weird episode. It's less weird, actually.
Yeah, there's some actual wrestling on it.
They actually bother to do wrestling. They're forced to do wrestling this week for reasons we'll get into. But let's look at last week's Nitro rating. Raw scoring 2.6. Nitro, 2.0.
Well, that's just not going to fly, is it, Eric, you prick? I was all sat here ready to tear off my shirt and reveal the WCW logo painted, you know, on my chest. Raw logo's in the bin. Not happening now, Eric.
Nope.
Not happening, Eric.
They just weren't biting on the interactive night.
I'm ashamed.
I'm surprised.
I'm just, no, this is the end. How can we come back from that? Moth.
They've got a plan. Thankfully, they've got a hot shot of a plan. Well, more on that in a little bit.
I don't buy it. They can't go up against the might of the World Wrestling Federation. Why even bother?
The revolutionary leader in sports entertainment. They're going up against...
For 50 years.
This is the first time in the Monday Night War that this week both shows are taped. Because Raw is in the can.
Right.
And it has been for a little bit.
For 3 months.
For three whole months. And Nitro is in the can this week as well, for good
Jacksonville,
reason.
Jacksonville, Florida, we're at.
We're back again in Jacksonville. Yeah. We are in...
Everybody's favourite.
13th of November. That's where all the wrestling is now. 13th of November, 1995, in the UK box office this week. To Wong Fu, thanks for everything. Julie Newmar, still number one.
Yeah?
Still haven't seen it.
No.
Ace Ventura, When Nature Comes, number one in the US box office.
When Nature Comes?
When Nature Calls.
I was about to say, is that a bit
back
of
on
a,
wanking
a,
again,
a,
okay.
A fucking blue Ace Ventura film.
We're back on wanking.
The bloke who comes around with the fruit van with all of his dodgy tapes.
Where did you live?
Did you not have a fruit man with dodgy tapes?
No.
We had an ice cream man with dodgy tapes as well. He'd sell like counterfeit Disney tapes and shit. So you'd get it to come with like the holographic stick. It would look real, but it'd be like, oh yeah, three for a fiver.
I had a sandwich man that had dodgy videos.
Yeah, there was a fruit man came around in this giant truck. Like it was fucking shaped gargantuan.
Like a strawberry.
It was like a moving truck. And he'd like open the back and inside he'd set up like scales and stuff. So he'd like go park up somewhere for a bit. Open the back and then take the lids off of all the drums of fruit and shit, and then he'd have his own little till just kind of built into the back of it, and he'd just sit in it like it was a shop.
So then you go,
but then under the till he'd have, you know, all of your knockoff Disney films and shit.
So you go, can I have a punnet of strawberries, a bunch of bananas, and Predator 2?
Basically, yeah. But we you know, he also sold pea pods, fresh pea pods with a boy, absolute boy. Look, you pop them open and go, peas.
He had a very nice upbringing, you seem to have, in the area where a fruit and veg man came round.
Yeah.
It's very nice. In the movie world, GoldenEye is out tonight, November 13th, 1995.
Sean Bean getting his big shot.
First outing of Sean Bean in a Bond film, and Pierce Brosnan.
Yes, Brosnan. You know, for the Brosnan films themselves are super cheesy. They're full of, you know, the gadgets and shit. And like, while that's a big part of Bond, I'm more into, you know, I really enjoy the realistic Bond with kind of realistic gadgets. But at the same time, Pierce Brosnan will always be my childhood Bond. So I can't, you know, Tomorrow Never Dies is just one of my favorites forever.
When you say realistic gadgets...
Like, you know, Daniel Craig, it's not like here's, like, you know, when you go back to some of the Bond films, it's like, here's a laser pen that can cut through precisely 3 inches of reinforced glass underwater while you're being mobbed by sharks with lasers attached to them. And you're like, what possible situation could arise in which I'm going to use? And then later on in the film, he's, you know, trapped in a submarine, escaping as laser sharks are trying to eat him. And there's 3 inches of reinforced glass and it says it on the glass and he's like...
So if it had been 3.5 inches, you'd be like, well, I'm fucked up.
Yeah. Or he'd have to try and fuck his way out of the last half.
I can fuck through the last. I can fuck through the last parlor's wall.
But I like, you know, I like more realistic Bond. I like, you know,
a pocket watch that
the
does
first time we
return,
saw Daniel
sort of
Craig, he gets the shit kicked out of him, and it's like Bond doesn't get the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, Die Another Day.
Yeah, it's like looking back
hoofing.
At Timothy Dalton and stuff. Timothy Dalton's Bond. Love Timothy Dalton's Bond, but because he's like busting, you know, fucking drug smugglers and shit, and it's realistic, and I quite like that. But at the same time, you know, Goldfinger's banging. The Brosnan films are cheesy as fuck and banging. I love them. Like, it's just, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, but
nice.
Goldeneye is just, mwah, just chef's kiss.
It's out, well, it's out tonight. We'll see if it makes the number one box office in the US next week. Well, spoiler, it does.
Of course it doesn't. Who's going to watch that show?
I Believe / Up on the Roof from Robson and Jerome. Still number one in the UK.
Of course.
Mariah Carey Fantasy, still number one in the US.
Okay.
Queen have released their final studio album.
Oh, is that the one with like the green cover?
Made in Heaven.
Yeah.
It includes contributions from all the original members following the death of Freddie Mercury. Yeah. 20 million copies are sold worldwide in
Doesn't
its first
surprise
week.
Me.
Now, one of the tracks from it, I remember one of the tracks is gorgeous. It's called Heaven for Everyone.
Yeah.
This could be heaven everyone.
Yeah.
And the story behind it's amazing because it was originally apparently going to be...
Warriors theme, everybody.
It was going to be the Ultimate Warriors theme.
It's going to make its return.
Run out slowly. it was written with Joan Armour Trading in mind to sing it.
Oh, shit.
Who did the most mental song in the history of music called Drop the Pilot.
Yes.
Drop the Pilot, Try My Balloon, Drop the Monkey, Smell My Perfume. It's great. But it was her in mind to sing it. Then one day, Freddie Mercury popped over to the recording studio, have a couple of drinkies, and then said, oh, I think I know how you should sing this bit. And I think I know how you should sing this bit. Just for a bit of banter, he went in, recorded the vocals.
Well, if you like it so fucking much,
what are you
doing?
Why
are you fucking doing? Showing me, I'm Joan Armatrade, and you cunt. Fucking telling me what to do.
And he went,
Freddie
all right,
Mercury,
I will.
Who the fuck are you? Nobody's heard of you or your band. Get out.
Try my balloon.
Try me fucking balloon.
Well, I'll record it then. See how you like it. That's Freddie.
Can you imagine Joan Armatrade just being like a gangster?
I'm lucky. I can walk under ladders.
Just grabbing a hold of Freddie. Get out of here, you slag.
You find me another podcast that talks about Joan Armour Trading and wanking.
And WCW.
And sometimes WCW. Go ahead, I dare you. In video game news, we're braced for the release of Donkey Kong Country 2 for the SNES.
Nice.
It's out this week. And and we mentioned this on the Raw podcast, so you're getting a bit of Dave Javu. This is why. It's Dave Meltzer's cousin, or at least we think
okay.
It is. We think we've seen him before. This game was made by a younger Rare team who went, why don't we just bin off Donkey Kong and just have Diddy Kong as the lead? And they went, oh, it's wild, let's do it. And they did, and it's a brilliant game.
I never had a SNES, so like I was a Sega kid, so like I,
you were Saturn man,
but by well no I didn't even have a Saturn by this point. I was still playing on a Master System.
No, but that's still a good machine.
I had shitloads of games. It's really not when you look back. When you look at it in a bubble, like it was great. Like I had so many games. I loved the shit out of Sonic. Like Asterix games were like some of my favorites. And there was a lot of stuff on there that I loved, but I at this point it was like PlayStation, because all these kids in school are getting PlayStations. It's like PlayStation.
Completed Asterix 3 times now.
I could never complete Asterix and the Great Rescue. The hitboxes were fucking ridiculous on it. You'd get like within a Roman, you'd be swinging, he'd come walking straight through your fist and just bump into you and you'd die.
Because if I'm right in thinking, like Asterix had quite a low punch.
His punches went up, but like the guy would sail through the whole animation sometimes. Sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't.
Oh, that's just bullshit.
Yeah, sometimes he would jump, sometimes he wouldn't.
Bullshit.
But the first one where you can switch between Asterix and I love that one.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah. Quite chunky graphics.
Yeah, I mean, they were all like, especially those ones with Master System, they were 8-bit. So they were like, well, yeah, really pretty bad.
Yeah.
Or is it 16-bit? No.
No, Master System was 8-bit.
Master System was 8-bit. Mega Drive 16-bit. And then you had the 32 come in.
Oh, yeah, the old mushroom that clicked onto the top.
The Tower of Power, Tomothy.
Too sweet to be sour.
Fucking Sega does what Nintendo don't, including going out of business. Fuck you, Nintendo.
Raw 2.6, Nitro 2.0, as we've said. Dave Meltzer in The Observer says, it's becoming more and more apparent that the pressure of one-upmanship between WCW and the WWF is causing both groups to book in a manner where there is no definite direction, but that direction becomes a course that constantly changes, and whatever the end result is, has little to do with whatever initial planning was.
There is a direction. It's the opponent's tail. That's all they're doing. They're two dogs in the park trying to get each other's tails.
That is what they're doing.
Yep.
We mentioned this on the Raw.
And in the middle is just Eastern Championship Wrestling slowly going, ah! Trying to, like, you know, he's like the chihuahua just sat in the middle. That's Eastern Championship Wrestling just
fighting any.
Or is it no? Is it extreme by this point? When does Douglas throw down the title?
By now, it's extreme.
Yeah, now it's extreme.
Yeah, yeah. This is now extreme, I think. No.
Yeah, he throws the title down in 94, I think.
Yeah, yes, because at this point,
Coraluzo's like losing his shit.
He's coming to the end of his tenure in the WWF at this point. Douglas. He's
the best ever.
Yeah, he's wrapping up in about 2 weeks' time. He's coming off the road and he's saying bye bye. WCW is taped tonight, as we said. Why? Do you know why they're taped tonight?
This time of year, I don't know. Are they being preempted by football?
No.
Other sports?
No. You'll love the reason why they're taped.
Hulk Hogan's doing something?
No, not even Hogan related.
Whoa.
They're in Japan.
Oh, fuck.
So on this very night, they are taping a New Japan WCW Super Show at the Tokyo Dome. And it has apparently flopped at the box office. 7,500 fans attended. A lot of papering in all that as well.
Yeah.
It was New Japan's smallest crowd for a... Sorry, Sumo Hall. It was New Japan's smallest crowd for a Sumo Hall show in at least 15 years.
That's weird.
Whoops.
Yeah, I mean, the ticket situation over there was pretty confusing anyway. Hearing about it from Chad, it sounds like, you know, only certain ticket outlets sell stuff, but you kind of go somewhere and you buy your tickets. So, you know, when like... I don't know how long you've lived in Newcastle, but like when I was a kid, if I wanted to go to a gig at the uni, I would have to go find a set record shop that sells the tickets for that uni.
Oh.
And so I think with like Wrestle Kingdom, I think Chad was like, oh yeah, you can go to a Lawson, like a little convenience store brand. Like they sell the tickets. They have like little stands where you can get tickets. And like, so I don't know if that factors into it much, or whether it's just the fact that Japan don't want none of this shy ass American, you know.
Could be a bit of economy. Yeah. Who's Chad?
Chad was our translator in Tokyo. Yeah. Big shout out to Chad.
Big shout out to Big Grover. Chad.
Big Chad.
Because the videos of you guys like breaking Japan.
Chad saved our ass. Like, Chad is the absolute man. Like straight up. Chad is the absolute man.
Can we get Chad on at some point?
Maybe. I have no idea.
I think it'd be nice.
The time difference is pretty intense.
I'm sure we might be able to figure something out. It'd be nice because we've got a Starcade coming up with quite a heavy New Japan. Little reference there.
We'll have to have a see.
See what we can do. So the New Japan show at Sumo Hall shakes down a little bit like this. Koji Kanemoto and Shinjiro Otani and El Samurai beat Ishizawa, Yuji Nagata, and Jushin Liger. Best match on the card, apparently, this one.
Yeah, great WCW names running through that entire bout.
They fixed it, thankfully. We got Junji Hirata versus Booker T.
Yeah.
With Hirata beating Booker after a diving headbutt. Scheduled as a tag match, because it's meant to be Harlem Heat versus Hirata and Iizuka, but just didn't.
Stevie Ray got to Ribera and decided he wanted more than one jacket.
Maybe.
And so he was like, you're going to have to eat every steak in this restaurant if you want two jackets. And he was like, all right, Eric, I'm missing the show.
Some say he's still there.
Yeah.
Master Chono and Saito beat Bobby Eaton and Johnny B. Badd.
Yeah.
Chono making Eaton submit to the STF. Badd's ring entrance gets a nice reaction. Eaton had leg injuries, so didn't do much in there. Since Badd is a face and Eaton is a heel in WCW, they did things where they didn't get along as a team. It was said to be okay as a match. Bit convoluted, maybe.
The star power is just not really there from WCW at this point, is it? Like, you've got some names, but not to a point where it's super refined. Like, years later, this would probably have gone down a bit better.
But maybe not like, this again.
Yeah, not quite yet, maybe.
Ricky Chosu and Masa Saito beat the Nasty Boys.
Okay.
Fast-paced, good match, as I said. Nicely done. Giant and Arn Anderson beating Shinya Hashimoto and Tadao Yasuda.
Okay.
That's a proper Lethal Lottery bollocks going on there. Giants over in Japan.
It's just a row of fucking WCW wrestlers with welts across their chests. Just go, don't send me back out there, Eric.
Don't send me
we
back.
We need you in the schmoz. Don't send me out there, Eric. I'm not doing it.
Ric Flair beats Osamu Nishimura with the figure four.
Okay.
Flair sold a lot, making him look good. Not a lot of heat, though. People were into the match, but they weren't massively warm to it. Tenzan beat Kurosawa, diving headbutt off the rope. This match was not good. Sonny Ono was in Kurosawa's corner, and Kurosawa did a lot of his American gimmick using mainly kicks, which, of course, he doesn't do well, says Dave.
It's just, I don't know. It feels very much more like a curiosity event than a must-see event.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It's like, well, how's this going to pan out? Rather than, oh, God, they're going up against each other.
They save the best two for last because we got Keiji Muto beating Stephen Regal, the best Japanese versus American match of the night. Mat wrestling for 10 minutes, and then they picked it up for the final six.
Nice.
Lovely time.
That sounds really good.
And in the main event, Kensuke Suzuki beat Sting for the WCW US title. Suzuki won the title, celebrated with his wife Akira Hokuto and Sonny Ono in the ring, winning with his trademark Northern Lights bomb in 12:47. Like you say, more of a curiosity than an actual,
kind of like not to undersell it as something like a roadside attraction. It's not something where you just, you know, you wouldn't know it was happening. But it's very much, it feels like if I was in the Japanese audience, it'd be like, maybe I'll go. I'm free that night.
Yeah.
You fancy going, get a few beers in? Yeah. Or nah, busy. Ah, screw it. We'll do next time.
It just seems strange because we'll get into the show now where we're taped from where we were last week, Jacksonville, Florida, because everybody's in Japan. I said, and I just, part of me goes,
everybody, including the entire paying audience in Jacksonville, because they fucking needed the numbers.
They all got flights.
Ted Turner's deep pockets.
Why not do Nitro from Japan?
I'd imagine it would have been a logistical fucking nightmare.
Although,
you know, because I don't know how it works, like in this era, but obviously everything would be satellite. And I don't know if the infrastructure was there where it would be reliably able to, you know, I don't know if, say, like Japanese baseball was being syndicated live or whether, so to like, say, an American sports channel at like 3 a.m. or whatever. If that was happening, which it feels like that should have been around from like the 80s, because Japan's bubble led to huge technological advancements.
Well, you could download games onto your NES in Japan.
Yeah, so like, but I guess it might have been an issue with, you know, needing the right satellites, or it could have just been like, look, that's a fucking logistical nightmare. Let's do this first one. Let's see if we can kind of get lay of the land there and then go. Because would Nitro have drawn a Japanese audience without Japanese names?
No, but I don't know whether you could have presented something like this. Maybe not. Maybe not.
If they were prepared to do a much smaller venue like Korakuen, it'd be interesting because it would be a really small Nitro. But like, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I don't think they could just do Sumo Hall and go, we're doing Nitro, everybody.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Maybe I think too much about it. Bischoff, Mongo and Heenan remind us that at World War III, the WCW title will be decided by the winner of the three-ring battle royal.
Are you sure that it's not War Games there, Bobby? Did you catch that? Bobby just keeps saying War Games.
Does
and Bischoff's just like, World War III.
Oh.
And he's like, yes, that's right, World War III.
Oh, Bobby. The same guy that said Saturday night's main event the other week.
Yeah.
And meant Sunday morning's main event.
You could just tell he was just like, well, what the fuck's the difference? It was just how quickly he was like, you know what I meant.
Fucking strong!
I can't even... Like, there's literally no fucking reason for it. We were debating this last time, right? So last week we had Hogan hanging out with Beach Bums.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit like, is this kind of showing that Hogan's maybe going off the rails, hanging out with some unsavory characters, maybe, if you want to put it like that. And Macho Man's down there checking up on him going, you know, don't you worry yourself. I know you're really stressed. I'll go fix everything. Now Hogan has just fallen ass backwards into a fucking fancy dress shop. And then emerged in, like, the haunted tunnel ride at a fair.
Picture this in your mind palace. Hulk Hogan. It starts with, like growling.
I thought it starts on a grave and growling, and it's like a panning shot across this grave, and I was like, is this the master back?
Yeah.
Because I was expecting like Solomon like that. But no, it just cuts straight. Like it kind of pans down and pans down and then just goes whoomp up to Hogan.
Cause you hear this growling and he's like, oh my Hulkamaniacs. And then you see this guy in a hood with a mask on, like fucking Zorro.
It's like Phantom of the Leg Drop, or as I wrote, Zorro but a politicking cunt.
And that's a very and Zorro is a good shout, because Hogan in this graveyard is wielding a sword.
And not like
why?
And not like, you know, like a sword fighting sword. Like, well, it's obviously a sword fighting sword because it's a sword, but it's a two-handed fucking giant, like great sword type thing. Compared to like what you'd expect as Zorro, you know, like you'd expect like a fancy little like rapier or something, like, you know, like a very light sword that can move quickly. He's just got this big lumbering fucking thing, like Angela off Drew McIntyre.
Why has nobody cosplayed as this yet?
Nobody knows what the fuck it is. What's Hogan cosplaying as?
I think he looks like
he's got shit drawn on his chin.
He has. That's the other bit. Like lines on his. Right. I tried. I searched high and low.
It's like he's
somebody
just
to talk
into
about.
Like, it's like he's just bitten into like a giant cherry pie.
Yeah.
And it's all just dribbled down his chin. Like
Meltzer doesn't reference this in the Observer. At all.
I'm not even going to dignify this with a write-up.
Like, that's it. I can't find... Like, Hogan never talks about this.
Yeah.
But Hogan woke up that morning and went, lads, I've got an idea. You know how I'm evil? What if I had a sword? Have you ever used... No. But last week you were hanging out with, like, bike beach bums. Well, I'm now a Dungeons & Dragons character.
Swordomania, brother.
Okay, so Hogan, in a graveyard, wearing a mask with a hood over his head, holding a sword, says the Dungeon of Doom is frightened of him. Mate, I'm fucking terrified of you. How much coke have you done? He's immortal. He says that Savage is going to bring him the head of Meng on a silver platter. A point that he makes several times whilst wielding the sword. Surely you should have given Savage the sword.
He stood around with this sword just basically going, Randy Savage is my bitch.
He's my boy.
Randy Savage is going to go take care of all my enemies so that I can get out there, hit the big boot, hit the leg drop, brother, and then, you know, walk out with the gold.
Hogan feels a strange presence after what went down with Sting last week. It was where Luger talked him away from the Scorpion.
Well, you would.
Deathlock.
It's a pretty fucking weird situation.
But he doesn't know if Sting is on the light or the dark side of Hulkamania.
Oh, trust me, neither will we, even after an explanation.
He's going to find out soon if he's with him or against him. Hogan reminds Savage to bring Meng's head on a silver platter. And I've just put here, this is absolutely batshit fucking bonkers.
Yeah, it doesn't have any grounding in anything. It's like, if you're going down the route of like, Hogan's going off the rails, then show him in a bar, like, drunk. If you're going down the route of Hogan's, you know, falling off the good path, maybe show him, you know, wrestling with, do I help somebody or do I not? And he just kind of stands there and you don't know what he does. You don't have to explicitly make him like drink on camera or leave somebody being attacked in the street, but you can like show him wrestling with it. You can show him literally stood there kind of weighing it up and like not knowing with a voiceover or something. But instead, we've got fucking swords.
It's like they make him literally evil.
Yeah, it's
rather
like
than subtly,
but methodically
I guess
you know, if the Dungeon of Doom are evil and they are kind of this weird satanic panic group, and you've got all of this stuff going on, then maybe he's been touched by that evil, and maybe that evil's expressing itself in different ways, or maybe Hogan just wanted to get out there and show some range, and you know, he's still got it, Mr. Nanny 2, come on, let's get it going.
I never even thought of that as a thing. This isn't a fucking wrestling skit. This is a demo reel.
It's an audition.
This is an audition tape. This is Hogan going, put me in Dungeons and Dragons, the movie, brother, brother, brother.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Imagine so it's like, had he been approached about maybe being in the full Monty at this point, would he have just done a scene where he was stripping?
He'd have to make sure that he wasn't going to be Metallica's bassist first.
Oh yes, of course. That's another, the many lies of Hulk Hogan.
It's just like, I think it was like, Lars Ulrich or James Hetfield were just like, what the fuck? No.
If you watch this episode of Nacho for anything, that particular bit of bollocks is worth 90 seconds of your
and
time.
And it's luckily the thing that opens the show.
You start strong. You're straight in.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
We go to our first match of the night. Meng is taking on, from the dark side of Venice Beach, California, Macho Man Randy Savage. He's even from Hogan's hometown and now. He's
not,
moved in with the Hulk.
That's what I mean. He's Terry's little bitch. But it's not even just Meng. It's Spider Meng.
Spider Meng.
Because he's got the Spider Man eyes that never line up when he's got the hood on, and he's constantly like pulling the hood up because it's just moving around too much because it's like a satin robe. And obviously, it's not got any friction. So every single step he takes, it's just going down. And he's having to pull it back up so he can see through. And then eventually, he just throws it off.
He just gets bored of it, doesn't Meng? Yeah, this is the second entrance with the Spider-Man outfit.
Yeah.
I think it probably is. Might be
the
last.
It's been around for a while because Dungeon of Doom and that.
Meng's in the ring waiting. Savage's music hits. Savage jumps through the crowd to start the match.
Sneaky, cheating, ran, Bo Bandy.
That's more dark side. And more legitimate dark side than Hogan walking around a graveyard with a fucking sword.
He's doing his dirty work for him.
He's
being his little bitch.
Little bitch Savage. Ooh, yeah. Savage jumps Meng to start off. Meng takes control when he counters an axe handle with a punch to the gut. Jimmy Hart rocks up with a megaphone to mock Randy Savage a little bit.
Yeah, and then Randy gets his shirt torn off.
Yes, he does.
Ooh, lovely. Sexy. Beefy boyometer ticking over to 11.
Hogan very upset. Set that no one's talking about how sexy he is at that very point in time. Meng misses a diving headbutt. Savage sends him flying into Jimmy Hart, who's on the apron. Randy lands an elbow for the three count. And he is, at this point, most definitely about to cut Meng's head off as ordered. But he doesn't get a chance to because your favorite runs out.
Is that Mr. Luger?
No, John Tenta.
Tenta pops up first.
Shark attack, screams Heenan.
I was about to be like, in what world do I like Lex Luger? So you get Tenta out. Tenta comes into the ring and it's like, oh, that's quite, And then Luger just kind of saunters down, has a stroll. Luger targets his arm repeatedly while a woman in the front row is just trying her best not to get covered in sweat and wrestler juices. Just like, not like that, but like, you know, she's just like got a camera and a coat and she's like, just fucking get away from me, man. and it's really funny. But yeah, Luger is specifically targeting one arm. Commentary's really selling it. You know, Savage is going to be hurt and it's going to be something we're going to play on.
The Wrestling Observer will report this as a potential injury to Randy Savage, a storyline bit that's being done to get him out of the World War III Battle Royal. It's important. I know we read from the Observer normally anyway for these episodes, but that's a very important bit of something to come.
Right.
The fact that Dave Meltzer has said Savage is legit hurt. This is a storyline out. Should he not be in World War III? That's a very important. I'm going to put a very important pin in that.
I mean, he's not wrong in a way because if you were to just use it as speculation rather than fact, you know, when you see an angle like this, and if a wrestler's been working pretty nonstop, and they're kind of appearing less, and they're kind of doing more entertainment side rather than wrestling side, and then they get injured, it's like, maybe they need a few weeks off.
Seems legit.
Yeah.
Seems legit. We have a short advert for World War III, and then straight back into the wrestling. The as yet uncrowned US champion, Kenzuki Sasaki, is in action.
Yes.
At this point in time, he's getting ready to, in the real world, to face Sting, if he hasn't done so already because of time differences between here and Japan. That threw me off.
They're 8 hours ahead of us. They are. So they're like, what, 17 hours ahead of the East Coast?
Yeah, that proper threw me off this week. My apologies to Theka, who will be on Desert Island Graps next week. I'm buggered up times.
Wait,
Japan.
No, what? What the fuck was I talking about? They're 8 hours ahead of us.
Yeah. Buggered up my time.
13. They're 13 hours ahead of the East Coast, I think.
Yeah, it's either way. It's a difficult time.
Shit's happening.
Time is a construct of human perception.
Yeah.
Benoit and Sasaki. It's a brawl from the off. Benoit instigating, Sasaki taking the lead. Some beautiful suplexes, lovely power slams, and some lovely lariats. This is a nice bit of a beefy battle.
The only thing I wrote about this was prep your tits, folks. This is going to be a choppy one.
Prep your tits.
But yeah, did you hear? There's a point where the WCW ring, the famous brick WCW ring, squeaks in pain as Sasaki launches Benoit into the corner, and it just goes like, eek!
There's a lovely squeak as it moves about half an inch.
Yeah, just
the power of a Sasaki launching a crippler. Benoit gets back into this. He gives us one German suplex, holds on. Two German suplexes, holds on. Dragon suplex for the three.
Yeah, it was, you know, it could have done with being a hell of a lot longer. I would have enjoyed that. But it ticked all of the bish boxes, didn't it? Like, it's car crashy, it's hard hitting, it's exciting because they were moving very quickly throughout. It kind of left you wanting to see more.
Mm.
And so it's like, well, maybe we'll see it again next time.
Strange booking, though, because as I say, Sasaki is about to become the US champion, the lineal US champion. So why have him lose clean as a whistle?
They've kind of got it all time-wise a bit fucked, though, haven't they? Because they haven't yet addressed Bobby's connection to the Japanese syndicate of wrestlers that have come in. They're kind of getting there. They're kind of, you know, anybody with a pair of eyes can see the New Japan logo on Liger's shirt. Like, you know, like anybody who saw that knows, oh, these people are, you know, New Japan talents. So, but back then it wasn't as widespread, you know. So it's sort of, he's going to go win the title. Then what's going to happen? And it's like, we should have maybe explained Bobby and that relationship first and maybe had Sasaki win here to then send him into that event stronger. But are many people going to see this super show in
that's
the US?
That's very true. We forget that, like, in 1995, you didn't have the ready access like you do now. Like, Dave,
you could just log in and watch it. Like, you had to kind of rely on scraps and little bits from Power Slam or The Observer or whatever.
Yeah, so it wasn't. So they could get away with, you know, presenting things a little bit out of order.
Yeah.
A little bit out of rhyme. But either way, that was a good match. That was good fun little bit of a battle.
Exciting.
WCW Pro will feature a segment featuring wrestlers from Japan paid for by Sonny Ono and Bobby Heenan.
Bollocks, I forgot we've got we've got Pro, haven't we?
Yeah, but that only starts this week.
Okay.
Because they've got this super show in the can.
We've got that second outlet where we can break that relationship to the public. Mm. Yeah, I forgot about that.
It's easy to.
Yeah, because it's just Nitro, isn't it?
Mm. And also, throughout this match, Bischoff says, Bobby, I want to talk to you about this relationship you've got with Japan. And they never quite get to it.
Yeah, it's kind of touched on, and Bobby's like, oh, you'll learn about it soon enough and all this stuff. So obviously, you know, they were prepping, but I still feel like maybe it should have been... It should have been like...
It should be a segment in the ring,
addressed,
maybe.
Yeah, or we should have at least had some sort of further addressing of the situation before this so that it wouldn't be completely bewildering when, you know, Sting comes back without the belt. And it's like,
Well, again, we'll touch on that in a minute. There's already a question mark about the belt here, which is even stranger. We'll get to that in a bit. Benoit is facing Eddie Guerrero on WWE Saturday Night. Sting's facing Bunkhouse Buck.
Everybody loves Bunkhouse Buck.
I tell you, everybody loves WWE at the moment. Eddie Guerrero.
Yes.
He's in action next, challenging Johnny B. Badd for the television title. Eddie Guerrero has competed on 8 out of 11 Nitros so far.
Yeah, and they do a good job of kind of hyping, like last week especially, it was like, well, you guys wanted to see more of him, so here he is. And it made kind of makes WCW seem like they take fan feedback into account. Eddie is somebody they are starting to feature more and more and more on TV in terms of, you know, like getting featured moments.
Yes.
Like he hit a massive nice dive to the outside on Benoit last time. And it's just sort of, you know, putting him in there with Johnny B. Badd is probably the two perfect guys, again, to tick all the Bish boxes.
And they do tick a lot of Bish boxes.
Yeah.
This was a great match.
Yeah.
Again, like, just like, good wrestling this
back
week.
Back and forth. They were on top of each other the whole time. The match breaks down a couple of points and they start just fighting. And the referee's having to kind of break it up. And then, you know, we're getting closer to the end of the match. And it's like, oh, this is a 10-minute time limit match. You know, we can't really be. And they're, you know, getting closer and closer to a fall. And then eventually time runs out.
I like how... like they do reference even like how scrappy this gets, because it starts very clean, well paced. They even do one of those complete stop down spots, and the crowd cheer a little bit. We're not quite conditioned for those in WCW yet.
The crowd kind of, when it gets a bit off the handle, it's like they're seeing something they shouldn't be seeing a little bit. It feels like they're kind of like, whoa. And then after the match comes to a draw, they just carry on fighting. Like it turns into just slaps and they're shoving each other and the referee's still trying to break it up. And then eventually, of course, I mean, they're both babyface as fuck, aren't they? So eventually they kind of come to their senses. Eddie shakes his hand and, you know, Johnny B. Badd gets to hoist the belt.
That's it. Bischoff describes bits of this match as uncharacteristic because of those strikes that they have going on. And it is, as the time limit is expiring, after Guerrero's kicked out of a tombstone, after Badd's kicked out of a tornado DDT, and they do that double cross body, double down. They're then hoying punches at each other as the bell sounds.
Yeah.
And then they announce that the time limit's expired, Johnny B. Badd's still the winner. And they do, as you say, they hug.
Yeah.
And Johnny holds up Eddie's hand.
Yeah.
As if to go. And I thought, well, this might be a setup for some things.
I'm amazed that this didn't just become a full-blown thing.
They never wrestled again?
Yeah, it's like they're a good fit. And it's not like Johnny B. Badd really needed it because he was over with the whole gimmick and everything. People still at this point enjoyed it. They still, you know, it was very hokey, the frisbees, the fucking glitter stick. But it was just over. And I think putting Eddie in there with somebody like that showed, you know, good intuitive decision-making because, you know, fuck, they can both go quite well. Make it happen.
And they bloody well did.
Yeah.
Excellent work. On commentary. Oh, by the way, there's a bit during the match here where they're obviously commentary is really hyped about this match, but there's a bit where the camera pans to the corner to watch an exchange in the corner, and you blatantly see in the background Mongo, Bischoff and Heenan all with their backs to the match because they're watching it on the monitors with the camera. That, and I get it, like,
it's why I preferred when it would be higher up and like in the stadium or the arena and it would be kind of tucked away, because then one, you got this big beautiful sweeping shot behind them. Two, you didn't see them like it looking like they were ignoring the match.
Yeah, it just looks like they've just got their back turned to everybody. Are we ready for some more Hulk Hogan bollocks?
Well, it's WCW. Of course we are.
Excellent.
Do you know what WCW stands for?
Well, Christ, Warren.
It just stands for Hulk Hogan.
Oh, fair enough. It's the letters merged to create Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Matt,
like,
it kind of goes like...
Brother, brother, brother.
Yeah.
Eric Bischoff tells us that Hogan has been watching what's been going down. Okay, so Hogan's watching Nitro tonight. He's been watching what's going down.
In his full get-up.
So therefore,
in his little graveyard.
That's it. So he's sat in the graveyard.
Just like...
He's got it on a little telly. Maybe one of those battery-powered ones. Just enjoying the show, He's watched... he's watched a Benoit match. He's watched a Guerrero match. He's watched...
Two episodes of Seinfeld, because he just really wasn't that bothered about the last segment.
Bored halfway through. He's watched Savage versus Meng. He's been watching what's going down. And he's decided, I want to face Sting next week.
Yeah. It's...
Like, Hogan talked about in this opening bit, like, having... He's got this hit list, right? He doesn't want to fight the Giant, who took his WWE title from him.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to fight anyone from the Dungeon of Doom. Doesn't want to fight Kevin Sullivan, who turned him to the dark side. Doesn't want to fight Jimmy Hart, who turned his back on him.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to fight Meng, who has just attacked his friend. Doesn't want to fight Lex Luger, who turned his back on WCW.
Who wants to fight Meng?
fair.
See, if you send fucking Savage after Meng, I'd say do it.
All these
get
people.
Get out there and you get the shit kicked out of you. If you actually, can just take him down a notch so he's a bit hurt when I face him, that'd be great.
Cut his head off so I can maybe beat him.
He just brings the head out, drops the leg drop on it.
Doesn't want to fight anybody who he's got legit beef with. No. Babyface Sting, the other top face in the company. I've got beef with you, brother.
But is he babyface?
Yes, he is.
We had the whole situation evolving. We've got Luger and I... just to play, you know, the Hogan Whisperer and look into, you know, what kind of logic we can draw from it, because this is what we do.
Well, I admire you
when
for
it makes no sense, we kind of go, well, maybe it was something to do with this. Maybe it was something to do with that. Maybe it's like betrayal from Sting that's kind of set him over the edge, or he doesn't know where Sting stands and he needs at least the foundation of Sting as, you know, the other big baby face that isn't him or Randy. He needs to know where Sting stands. So and then once he knows where Sting stands, he can then plan to make his move with Sting in his corner, potentially.
So you think then...
So he's going to face Sting and maybe shake his hand afterwards if everything's all right. But he just needs to see it and experience it. See if he's been touched by the darkness. See if Sting's going to end up sitting there in a Phantom of the Opera mask and having a sad wank in a graveyard.
He would wait and have a sad wank in the rafters in many years to come. Could Hogan not just ring him?
Well, Hogan does ring the show. He doesn't ring the show on camera, but later on we do find from Mean Gene. Well, Hulk Hogan was on the phone. And so he has rang up. You know, he's got a mobile. We know that much. He's somewhere with signal. He can't be in parts unknown.
What is the signal like in parts unknown?
I imagine it's non-existent. As I've said before, I imagine parts unknown is just like a room in Titan Towers. You just kind of walk through a door and then you open it and there's just a desert. And then you look behind you through the door you've just walked through and it's just a door frame and it's just desert and that's you can't get out.
That'd be a great
unless you're like
series.
Summoned.
I'd love that.
You're like summoned out of parts unknown.
That's a great WWE Network series.
I don't.
It'd be amazing. Like an animated series from the people that brought you Courage the Cowardly Dog. The animation
Courage
team behind
the Cowardly
that.
Dog lives in Parts Unknown.
Even more
yeah,
so.
Straight up. Like, that's what all I imagine more. Parts Unknown to be. Just like anything can happen. It's fucking weird and it's desolate.
Yes, please. Yeah. Do that. I like how when you go to a website that doesn't exist on WWE.com, a web page that doesn't exist,
it will
pull up a picture of Parts Unknown.
Tell you what, yeah, it's got like the little house and everything,
yeah,
like the saloon.
It's
yeah,
great,
that little
is.
Warrior just stood there in full gimmick in the desert.
Papa Shango.
But like, let's do that series. Can we get the original animation team from the Men in Black animated series, though?
Ooh.
Because I saw that in CEX the other day for like £3 on DVD, and I wasn't going to buy it. But like, I remember looking at it, I was like, holy shit, I forgot that entire thing existed. I forgot that the Men in Black comics were a lot darker than the films were, and like, the animated series kind of carried over that nice, creepy, weird feel. And so if we can get them on board, if you're out there and you're one of those animators, come on, let's make it happen. Parts Unknown series.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Make that a thing.
Tom's going to voice Warrior.
Absolutely.
Hello, I'm going to make you say some horrible things.
Oh, no. Just capture them on tape.
Yeah,
and
you voice Warrior, but specifically only Warrior when he's out doing public talks.
so we're just cancelling me now, are we? That's good. Do you know what? Do you know what? Cancel me. I'd look forward to the sleep. So no one else, only Sting. He doesn't want to phone Sting per se. He wants to take it up with him in the ring. So
yeah.
That's what we're saying then. Next week.
I figure he wants to know where Sting stands before he formulates his plan that relies on everybody else doing the work for him.
That's
because you know it's
very
true.
Good.
You know it's like if he can get Sting out there to wrestle somebody else, he's going to do it.
This is for next week. Again, it comes back to what Dave said in The Observer about this desire to pop a weekly television.
He's going to say pop a wheelie.
Pop a wheelie. John, do Dave Meltzer popping a wheelie.
Just Bischoff just trying in a car park for ages. It's like, I will get it. And then one day I'll buy myself a motorbike and then come like 2 years' time, hog wild. And he's like, look at me. I can't do a wheelie still, but I got my hog.
Watch me pop a wheelie. Stop it,
Bish. They lower him from the roof on that platform on his bike. He's like spinning around.
Like how like the car Hogan design, like the car Homer Simpson designed.
You've seen that, right? You've seen Bischoff being lowered. Yeah, I was going to say.
He had so much fun doing WCW. Oh, God,
it's like you can't really blame the guy when you look at it in debt because it's like you're playing with house money and you get to do crazy shit. Yeah, ultimately, yeah. It doesn't end well. But like,
no.
Yeah, I want to descend from an arena roof on a fucking motorbike. Do it.
If you'd had your chance during WCPW to descend on a motorbike from an arena, would you?
I'd probably be too busy cutting it.
You could edit it nice when you finish.
You just sat there with the live mixer on a fucking motorbike.
Amazing. Like,
camera three. Fall off. Just land on my ass, like 4 feet off the ground. Like, just, just falls on me.
Was there a thing that you wanted to do in your wildest dreams in WCPW that you never got a chance to do?
Not really. Like I was just there to
wildly
I was
creative
just sort
and
of
silly.
There to work. No. Like it kind of I never really had any interest in being, you know, out and among it, the other guys.
But I mean, like, you sort of put
it,
like a segment you wanted to see.
Oh,
put
like a
together.
Segment. I would
not
have
necessarily
loved
with
to have
you
done,
involved.
I would have loved to have done something where, say, we introduced a new belt.
Yeah.
And then had somebody. Well, there was a whole thing where I thought it'd be really cool if we had somebody come in as like a heel. You have like a manager of a team or something who, or a manager of a wrestler who kind of sides with the other guy or brings in this person to kind of pay, you know, to kind of fuck over his former client or whatever. That person comes in, takes their belt and just fucks off.
Oh.
And just takes it to another company.
And that's it.
And then like, but not a company in the UK, like a company elsewhere, just fucking takes the belt. And it's like, then the story becomes like, well, you fucked us here to that manager, and that manager then becomes central in this whole, like, well, we're going to have to put a team together and go back and get it.
That's great.
And it would be like a whole show. Would it be cross-promoted with somebody else? And then it'd be sort of like a, you know, oh, well, we're going to do it. Like, we've got to get along in like a Survivor Series way. But you'd be able to do a whole show, and then kind of the main event is one-on-one for that title or whatever.
I like that. I like anything that involves like a title being kidnapped.
Because that way you can have, you know, like, both sides can get wins in.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, further whatever. But I quite like the idea of, yeah, having somebody come in, get the belt and fuck off.
Oh, that's cool.
And it being this person's fault and it being like, you know, well, you've done this. You brought him in. You brought them in to come and take that belt. Like, you've got to get it back. And then that person's now got to kind of do the full switch from being a heel to mega face.
Assemble a task force.
Got to get the Avengers together, basically.
Brilliant. Yeah. I like stuff like that. See, wrestling's fun.
Yeah, it can be.
It can be fun. It doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be 1995 WCW.
Talking of which, Mean Gene interviews the Dungeon of Doom.
I forgot about it. I didn't even make notes on that.
I'll give you the cliff
it's the
notes.
Same fucking promo. Is there any point?
Pretty much. Gene admonishes Jimmy Hart for his actions towards Hogan. Jimmy Hart is loving life, but doesn't know what to do with all these Hulkamania jackets that he's got stashed. Kevin Sullivan says he spent 10 years lying awake figuring out how to end Hulkamania. Honey, are you okay? You've barely touched your Sonic the Hedgehog curry. I just can't think about something about how to defeat Hulk Hogan. God, hun, like, this is when my mother and dad came around last week, and like you just zoned out the whole time thinking about how to beat Hulk Hogan.
She tells him like, off and everything. It's brilliant. She's just telling him off, and he sits there and he takes it. He's like, maybe you're right. And then just above him, this giant, kind of like, you know, when Crash Bandicoot levels are loading and Neo Cortex pops up, just this giant Hogan head gently materializes in front of him. And only he can see it, and it just goes, rent free, brother. And just fades back off. And Sullivan's just like,
Just kidding. His phone, they find his phone is just full of like notes on how to beat Hulk Hogan.
I do love that the Giants lines have been the same for roughly 6 weeks now. Because it's just, I will be the champion forever.
Yeah, that was pretty much what he says again here. Basically, he's the solution to beating Hulkamania is the Giant winning the 60-man battle royale with Cheese. Giant promises to be the WWE World Heavyweight Champion forever. While Sullivan pretends to be Hogan feigning an injury.
Yeah.
Bless them. They have a lovely time. So, Dean Malenko and Sting.
Sting versus Lenky.
Is Sting and Lenky is our main event of the evening.
Not a bad main event.
Do you know what? I was racking my brain. I was flogging my memory to think whether or not I'd seen a Malenko Sting match before.
Well, while you were doing that and thinking about wrestling, I was wondering who the fuck was the guy in the front row in full mask?
I didn't see him.
Like on, so if you're watching this episode back, if you watch this match and you know the entrance ramp where they come down, you have those two kind of smaller skirt sides where they make room for the entrance ramp. It's on that side. So it's on stage side of the ring. But as they're wrestling around the ring, there's just a bloke sat there in a fucking mask. And I was like, who's going to do a run-in? Who's going to do a run-in? Sting. And then the match happens. The match ends. We get the promo and everything. And he's still no run-in. And I was like, oh, it's just a fan.
Just a guy just dressed up.
Racking my brain going, it's a big guy. Like, who the fuck is it? They look big. Nothing.
Was he was offered a contract by the end of the night.
Zero payoff.
Oh, that's a shame. No, I'm going to go back and see that now, see what he looked like. Sting in this match, whilst the big man watches, hits a suplex body slam combo that I've never seen before or will again. Like, I've never seen it. Like, he picks him up for a suplex.
Yeah.
Kind of turns it into a body slam. Yeah. I don't know whether it was just the way that Malenko's momentum carried him.
Yeah,
and Sting
maybe
just kind of
he just kind of carried through
with
instead.
It looked really nice.
Meh.
Really nice. Good match with these two. Malenko avoids a Stinger splash. It's a beauty of a missile drop kick. Then Sting reverses a Texas clover leaf into a cradle for the win. A small package, rather, for the win. These two have lovely chemistry.
Yeah.
Really lovely chemistry. Sting's in the ring with Mean Gene Okerlund after the match because we've had a little bit of a confab with the commentators for a bit talking about Hogan because, of course, when Hogan's not on the screen, we should be asking,
where's Hogan?
And Sting addresses the Hogan calling him out thing. He says he never dreamed that Hogan would be knocking on his door. He can let slide that Hogan called him a little dog on the porch. He's really a big dog in WCW with a long list of people that he has already sent packing, and he's looking forward to next week's match. Did you catch what Mean Gene Okerlund said?
No, I was too busy.
Following this bit.
I was too busy sitting there going, who's a big boy? Sting's a big boy. Yes, he is. Isn't this Sting? Are you a big boy, Stinger?
Mean Gene Okerlund accuses Big Boy Sting, Big Dog Sting, of something being awry because Hogan says something.
Well, something's fucking up.
So Mean Gene says,
why did he just piss off after Luger whispered sweet nothings in his ear? Like, what?
Mean Gene hits us with that famous phrase. I will quote Mean Gene verbatim.
Okay.
Well, Sting, if it looks like a rat, if it smells like a rat, and if it quacks like a rat, you can rest assured that it is a rat.
Yeah.
Mean Gene, where do you live? Where the rats quack. I feel like he started the duck thing, realized it doesn't scan, but was already in the flow. Thought, I can't really work around this without saying it squeaks like
it was funny.
It was funny.
It worked.
Sting asks if Hogan is true and when he says he smells a rat. Sting says he and Hogan can get it squared away next week. They're going to tie one off next week. Have a pint next week. And that's it. So we're kind of hotshotting Sting Hogan 1.
Yeah. It's sort of a nothing week otherwise, though. Like,
yeah.
Some pretty good wrestling, but ultimately, you can tell it's a taped episode. Nothing really of consequence happens. It's all just hype and bluster for stuff to come.
Because, yeah, it's, as you say, they've just taped a bunch of stuff. They don't want to give too much of the way of spoilers.
Yeah.
So they keep the episode fairly straightforward. They've got a big Nitro next week with Hogan and Sting headlining. Yep. And then they've got World War III. So they've got a busy schedule. Maybe there is something to what Dave Meltzer says while he's popping wheelies, that that they're booking week to week in order to try and outdo the other. Maybe there's something to that. Maybe!
It's definitely going to slow down soon, though.
Ha! I think it slows down in 2001.
Yeah, when it meets a fucking brick wall.
Fucking the biggest of all the brick walls. That was Nitro this week, like you say. A bit of a... It was there. There was some good wrestling, but that's about it.
Inconsequential.
Inconsequential. With the exception of Hogan stalking in the graveyard like a fucking midnight creeper with a sword.
It's like a go-home SmackDown for like a B pay-per-view or a C pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Where it's just kind of like, well, there's stuff coming up, you know, on Sunday night. It was fucking wrestling and that. But the pay-per-view get the fucking network. But it's Baron Corbin doing that promo again.
What's Baron Corbin doing in the Impact Zone?
Here's a whole clip from last week.
That's pretty much what we got, isn't it? Pretty much what we got. More of the Classic Nitro review next week when we take a look at Hogan versus Sting, numero uno, on the podcast feed this weekend. Have you watched Afterlife with Ricky Gervais?
Bits of it. I've got a list as long as my arm of stuff that I want to devote time to watch.
It's, well, the brand new season is out now. The reason that I give it that little cheeky plug is because we're joined this week on Desert Island Grounds by Ethan Lawrence, who plays James in Afterlife. And he's a massive wrestling fan.
Really?
Yeah. So we have a chat about him working with Ricky Gervais on Afterlife. We have a chat about him doing stuff on Bad Education and Horrible Histories and his favourite wrestling matches.
You're awesome, you. You get all the good people.
Getting all the cool people. Getting all the cool people. We had the spoiler. We had the chat this morning and it was lovely. So you'll hear it on the podcast feed on Sunday. And other stuff as well. Me and Matthew doing the SmackDown review ahead of No Way Out 2001. That's on Saturday as well. Anything you want to?
I have no idea.
About? You just normally head down into the.
I just said back editing. To the editing.
Back to your desk. Back to your desk. Until we're next together, he's at the Sam Driver on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. At Cold Hard Cold Twitter. It quacks like a rat.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.